Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. It is maybe we'll call it the Angie Setzer Show, the goddess show, because we got her today on board to explain what the hell's going on in farmland and what that stupid USDA report meant. I think it's a bunch of crap, but that's just me. Angie Setzer is brought to you by BarkBox, because she's a customer at BarkBox, so we get to advertise them when she's on, and it's... You want to check them out? All you got to do is go to BarkBox.com. Get one free extra month of BarkBox at www.getbarkbox.com/The Bubba Show. Angie Setzer, what's up? The goddess of grains and the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. What's going on?
Oh, not much. I would say just living the dream, as I do every week. But I don't know. It's hard to live the dream when you have a bunch of angry or sad customers that you're talking to on a daily basis. But... hey, still a good day when you're above ground.
Right? As long as you can see, as long as your feet are on top of the grass instead of underneath it, it's okay, right?
Exactly it. So I guess I'm going to continue to go with that mindset here for the next foreseeable future until things turn around and folks get happy again.
But nobody should be angry at the great Angie Setzer, because you told everybody they should be protecting their things a long time ago, right or wrong? I mean, I have it on tape. If anybody's not sure, they can come to me, because I got everything on tape.
I appreciate that, because that's what history tends to change a little bit once things are said and done. And I hate to be that person that's like, hey, told you so. But I've been a little nervous. Or going into this report here this past week, I was exceptionally nervous that the USDA would do this. I liken it to Lucy and the football. You know, we're Charlie Brown, the USDA's Lucy, and we're trying to kick that damn football they keep pulling out from underneath us. And every time we go in and expect them to hold that football there steady and nice, and every time we end up flat in our backs, it seems. So anymore here, I've finally have caught on. It's only taken me, 4 years of USDA disappointment to go in expecting it, but it doesn't hurt as much when you think they're going to do it to you anyway, I guess, maybe, if you're not caught off guard. But I guess it's such is life, such is the life of the farmer, and here we go.
Okay, so do me a favor. Explain to everybody, explain to listeners, what was the report and what was so damaging about it?
Well, it was an updated supply and demand report, except for in the summertime between basically August. It starts in July that we have the National Agricultural Statistics Service. It's a division of the USDA. They're heavily devoted or heavily focused on the supply side of the U.S. domestic market. So basically their job is to put together their expectations on yield. They release crop conditions each week. They then turn those and yield surveys and objective plots and all of these things into what they released last Thursday, which is their production estimate for the country. The World Board, who puts together the supply and demand reports that we get out every month, then takes that NAS number, plugs it into their demand expectations and carry-in expectations, and turn it into what they anticipate for new crop, ending stocks, production, et cetera. So what really caught us off guard last week was that the NAS number that came out was much higher than what traders had been anticipating. Going into the report last week, everyone was saying, based on crop conditions that had been released, condition ratings released by NAS, and all of this, that they were anticipating, the average trade guess going into it was around 166 bushels to the acre, with some already talking, reductions as low as a 162 or something like that. What's important about that is much below 165 on corn yield, you take carry out down to around, 1.5 billion bushel. which isn't necessarily tight, but it goes from being burdensome down to, okay, if we were to have another production issue in next year's growing season, or we were to see someone trip up globally or demand increase or something like that, a 1.5 billion bushel carryout is considered to be reasonably, I don't want to say tight because it's not necessarily tight, but it's thought to be a lot tighter, of course, than a 2.3 billion like we're seeing right now. You know, a near billion bushel cut in carryout from one year to the next is pretty substantial. The USDA, or at least the NAS division of the USDA, did not agree and came out with a 169.4, which was, you know, nearly four bushel or at least three bushel higher than what the average trade guess was, and thus resulting in, you know, basically 300 million bushel more carryout than what folks were expecting, and a negative market reaction, you know, if you could call it that. I mean, we're only down, you know, 11 cents from where we were the day prior, but it was a negative reaction, you know, directly after, and one that kind of keeps a long-term cloud over this market, just with the thought that production isn't necessarily needing to be lowered as much as what traders were thinking going into Thursday.
But now, you know, I always have an issue with this because, you know, I think they go to one farm and they check the acreage there and then they don't do anything else. I mean, because there's a lot of areas in the country that aren't going to get anywhere near that. Okay. And they're not, I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of places that don't get near that anyways, but, and there's always some areas, but there seems to be a lot more areas that are going to come up much shorter than anywhere near what they're talking about. And so I don't get how they come up with this ridiculous stuff. That's just, I'm not a big fan of the USDA to begin with. So go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, just today, there was a conversation with the gentleman that is basically in charge of NAS, or in charge of how they put together that number. And I would say, based on the information that he put out, yeah, it's a pretty, about as clear as mud as to how they would put it together. If you look back at what they did, they use they'll take a little bit of historical data, take a tiny bit of weather conditions, a little bit of their crop conditions, some of their objective yield samples, which is an actual USDA plot in a state, but they rely really heavily upon farmer surveys. In this past go around, they released 21,000, or they received 21,654 surveys. What really caused a lot of folks to scratch their head is that your top corn producers in the country are Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Minnesota, the Dakotas, and Nebraska. Over the past few years, you've seen Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma kind of pick up a little bit because they haven't been necessarily entrenched in drought as they had been, you know, prior to 2012. But when you look at a breakdown as to which states answered which reports, the information received by the USDA was what you could say heavily skewed, in the sense that the biggest response came out of Texas, which, of course, Texas, you know, has the most acreage for a state, not saying most acreage for corn. You know, it may have more farmers or something of that nature, but they're not in the top 10 as a top 10 corn producer. They turned in 1,543 surveys versus only 685 out of Iowa, 580 in Indiana, 591 for Ohio. You know what I mean? So your information that the USDA used, in their own words, said that their survey results were what they pegged much of the yield projection upon. It was somewhat skewed in where
it's BS. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break, because I gotta get deeper into this. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president, the VEEP, the vice president of grains at Citizens Great. Elevator. And of course, she is being brought to you by BarkBox.com. She's a user, so she can give you good stuff about it. But anyways, if you want to receive one free month, you get toys, you get snacks for your dogs. And to receive one free month, go to getbarkbox.com/TheBubba Show. Again, that's getbarkbox.com/TheBubba Show to receive one extra free month of BarkBox for free. And don't forget libertytalk.fm and download The Bubba Show every day. And someday you might get to see me on that Iowa television that Angie keeps promising me. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Wars. We'll be right back with Angie after the break. The Bubba Show.
Something to say to you.
Welcome back to the Angie Setzer Show. This is Todd Bob Horwitz, your host, and we're being brought to you by BarkBox. That's getbarkbox.com. /the Bubba Show to get a one free month and get some treats for your dog, or you can get them from me because I'll need some treats after this beating. Anyways, Angie, so you were talking about the surveys that were being turned in, and of course, obviously, right away we can call BS on the surveys. But go ahead and finish your thought there, please.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at that, you know, you're really seeing what you could say is skewed information or maybe perhaps incomplete information being used to put together this what could be a major report or what was a major report. I mean, I don't think there's any question as to it being an important factor in market moves or a factor in what we see, because as much as you want to complain about what the USDA does or the information that they put out, they are the parameters with which we have to trade, you know, in commodities. It's just the fact of life that a lot of the folks that we expect to come in from the outside, you know, really rely on USDA or government data to form an opinion as to whether or not supply is limited or demand is increasing or something of that nature. So, you know, the numbers that we got on Thursday are what we have to trade, like, love or hate them. You know, they're what they have. We have to trade in the next month when we get an update again from the USDA. I will say, you know, like I said, it going into this report, you know, if we had had a conversation the day prior, and you and I, if you had asked me, okay, what happens if they come in at 169? I'd have told you we'd probably be a limit down for a couple of days. We really weren't. So I think the fact that we're only 11, 12 cents off from where we were, you know, the day prior going into that report tells us that the most of the market doesn't necessarily believe that the yield number projection that the USDA put out last week is as accurate as what the market is trading right now. You know, a carry out as they projected with production as they projected, you know, would really indicate a low $3 figure, and December corn here is still hanging around that 373 market, you know, as we talk right now.
Well, I mean, their numbers are never right, though, when it comes down to it. And when it comes down to it, it does come back down to markets and what markets are going to trade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, yeah, we're trading off of that, but are we really? And, you know, again, is this more of a commercial trade of guys who aren't even involved that are just in it to trade them? Or is this legit? I mean, what are you thinking from your standpoint? I mean, I guess, you know, you and I were both fairly bullish on corn and wheat, and we thought that the soybeans had a little bit of issue. And, of course, soybeans have, I think, a pretty big issue now. Mm-hmm. But overall, are you still bullish? Do you still think that there's room to the upside? What's your take now that you have this information along with everything else?
Well, I think I'm just taking this information as a speed bump in the way. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, I think that the cash market's going to be what tells us the answer to everything. And we won't generally see the cash market actually trade or show itself or show us the true face of what's going on until we get into January and February. You know, you can see it, for instance, in the spring wheat market right now. You know, the USDA has come out and said they have not reduced spring wheat production expectations anywhere near what traders have been thinking, you know, so your double struggle is right now that the market itself has done things that haven't happened for the last 3 years. So you've seen a significant flow of grain, old crop, into the pipeline at the same time we're harvesting a crop. So a lot of folks will say, oh, well, look at that full cash pipeline. That's a perfect example as to why Minneapolis market has to back off, blah, blah, blah. Well, no crap. But, you know, if you don't see a full pipeline after having what was considered burdensome stocks and roll into harvest, I'm going to question what the heck's been going on all along. Now, we take a look at what that market's doing come December, January, February, and it's going to be a different ballgame. That will be when we finally start to see, you know, the lack of production, if in fact that production decrease has happened, which I fully believe is the case. You know, it's the same thing in corn right now. And we had a reasonably solid year last year. So basis levels are pretty wide. Carry levels are pretty wide. You know, now we're starting to talk. I'm seeing some of my buyers starting to indicate that basis levels, you know, they anticipate or they would like to lock in, you know, similar to a bit better basis levels than a year ago right now, because they are concerned over overall production in Ontario, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, you know, right here in my backyard. So you know, long term, the cash market will be what will tell us the truth. And the USDA will have to come to terms and eventually meet up with what the cash market's showing. But we have seen it take months, if not years before. I mean, it wasn't only 6 months ago or less, the USDA made an adjustment to United States carry out all the way back to 2014 in soybean. You know, so I always joke the USDA is like your wife. She might be wrong, but she sure as hell isn't going to admit it. You know, you might get a nice dinner out of the deal, but you're not going to get
You're not getting the whole package. That's the bottom line.
That's just it, and that's the USDA. You know, so we've got a long time to determine what actually is out there, and unfortunately, you know, in this market structure, especially when we're trading in a range, you know, and on the low end of the recent range, and farmers are looking at lesser yield and lower prices and extreme frustration, you know, unfortunately, we may have to take some time before we actually see an adjustment that'll be meaningful to this market.
It's like when you have a fight with your wife, you have extreme frustration, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So again, I want to get back to the USDA because again, I'm not a fan, right? I'm not a fan of any government agency because at the end of the day, Angie, my opinion, again, these are Bubba's words, not Angie. She can agree if she wants, but in my opinion, they don't do a good job at giving you an accurate count or an accurate report. And then for them to be able to go back 3 years later and adjust it, well, gee, that did me a lot of good. You went back when it didn't do me any good anymore. What the hell is it? What is it going to do for me today? And that's where I think that this is like the USDA is like the Fed. They're a bunch of dumb economists that are very smart from a book standpoint. You know, they all have great degrees and all this, but none of them understand how to live in the real world and where it came from. And, you know, actually in your case, to be on a tractor and have to know to be able to do something or adjust something when something breaks down at the last minute. Not that you can't anticipate all the time. You have to be able to think on your feet, and everything we get from them is never thinking on their feet. It's again, if you can update something or revise it a year or two or 3 years later, you're not doing a very good job reporting it. That's my views. What are yours?
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I've been struggling with the USDA all year. I try not to criticize too much in the sense that I remember the year the government was shut down in October. We didn't get a report. You know, we just kind of languished. There wasn't anything to really trade on. You know what I mean? It's that old bull needs to get fed every day. You know, when you have no new information, you tend to move lower just because it's easier to sell than buy in the face of an uncertain market. You know, so I remember that, and I try to remember. It's kind of like one of those things where, you know, any boyfriend's better than no boyfriend or something like that. So any USDA number is better than nothing. And the reality is sometimes, you know, I think the market itself could develop a far better plan. One of my biggest struggles with the USDA is there's far more accurate information out there than farmer surveys or things like that. We've got satellite information. We have FSA information, which is another leg of the USDA. It's the Farm Service Agency. That's where farmers go and register their acreage planted for crop insurance. And then once we get crop insurance information that comes through at the end of harvest every year, we have actual yield levels or yield numbers for, you know, 98% of farmers out there. So we have actual production figures in the USDA. We just don't use them. We still use this antiquated, you know, NAS number that's put out. And so I do struggle with that. The science has changed. Our ability to calculate what's out there, our ability to know what's out there, you know, the world's gotten smaller in every facet of our life, but the USDA. It's as though we just ignore the technology that's available at our fingertips in order to determine what actually is being produced and still kind of go with the, well, it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality. Well, it is broke, obviously. You know, if traders or farmers believe that their crop is sub 165 and the USDA believes it's above 169, there's obviously some sort of lack of communication or lack of understanding as to what's going on. To a lot of people, you don't think 4 bushels to the acre is a lot, but the reality is it's a significant move. You know, as I said, carryout-wise, stocks-to-use-wise, it's a big move in price determination to lose that much yield or to gain that much yield. And to think that the USDA can't get something pinned down, I think, is foolishness. They have the technology.
Hold that thought. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, and, of course, LibertyTalk.fm. You can download the show every single day. We'll be back right after the break with more from Angie Setzer, the Goddess of Greens. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Works coming right back. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend Angie Setzer, the Goddess of Grains, also the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, and also the person who promised me Iowa TV. But anyways, okay, so, you know, obviously, I don't like the people. I just don't like what the whole organization stands for. All right, but I got two questions for you, and I'm going to give them both to you at once, because if not, I might forget. Number one is, why don't they get their dead ass off out of behind the desk and go out to on a crop tour? Why don't they do what the other guys do and go on a tour and actually check for themselves what it looks like instead of depending on surveys? And part two of the question is there any I don't want to call it collusion, but, you know, obviously it's in the insurance company's best interest, or in the, you know, the entitlement package best interest so they can keep the prices lower when they got to pay out. So go ahead, yeah. fire away, and I'm going to sit back and enjoy your answer.
Right. I'm going to hang up and listen. No, the NAS does have, or they used 960 corn plots and 917 soybean plots in this last report. They went out and they'd like to count ears or whatever. They eventually will project ear weights and things like that. But they've got a small amount. I don't know if I said that or thought it, but they used only half. So next month they'll use double that amount, and they will have some survey numbers. I have participated on what is going to be this year's the Farm Journal. It was the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and there are USDA officials that do come out on that tour. They don't publicize that they're out on that tour, but they are. We had a guy, we called him USDA Jeff. He was from Maryland. He rode with us. He was a hoot. I really enjoyed having conversations with him about, you know, what they do to come up with supply numbers out of China and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, it was a really interesting factor. But so they do say they get out and look and check out what actually is happening. Whether or not they take that into full consideration is what's up for question, because that's just today. Like I said, in the conversation they had with the gentleman from NAS, he indicated that this last month was heavily relied upon those farmer surveys, which, as we talked about, were really skewed in where they came from. So there are some of that, but it really is kind of a struggle as to how much weight they put onto those, what they call objective yield plots. On the collusion side, it depends on what you think. I mean, the reality is, if you look at a spring wheat producer this year, right now, I believe is their harvest price determining period, which means that there's certain times of the year for corn and soybeans, they figure the initial prices in February. And then again in October, they'll take a look, put out a pricing average, and whichever one is higher, they will give the farmer, and that is how they source guaranteed revenue for that crop. So for spring wheat guys, had they put together the price determining period in July, their price that would have been given to them for their harvest price option would have been much, much higher than what it is now, with spring wheat dropping, you know, 80 cents or more from the level it was prior to the report. So you could say that in some ways the USDA benefits from low volatility Right now, the initial price paid or projected price paid for December corn is $3.96. So if today, the pricing were to be determined, they would use that initial price and not the harvest price on guaranteed revenue. But yeah, I mean, the less the prices or the more that the price doesn't move from what the initial determined price factor was, the less the USDA is going to have to pay out and you know, things of that nature. So you could say that the USDA benefits, or at least the government agency that will pay out your insurance, and not to mention the farm bill, your revenue, your acreage, ARC payments, your county revenue and things like that. You know, there is a benefit to low volatility and low prices when it comes to some of these payouts.
Yeah, of course there
is. I'll let you determine.
Well, of course there is. That's why we don't get to square numbers. That's why, you know, look, they have too many people that work for them, and they got too many people doing nothing that work for them, and let them go out and get off their dead ass and go you know, around and do a tour themselves and make a real determination. But of course, that's never going to happen, because like I said, when you're allowed to adjust numbers, and that's the same thing as any market. You know, some people say markets are in a bubble. Well, they would never say it's a bubble now. They won't say a bubble until 10 years from now. Well, what do I need you 10 years from now? I need you now, not in 10 years. And
yeah, I need you to have accurate information, which, as I said, I mean, technology would give accurate information, but we seem to be ignoring the technology, A, that's at our fingertips, and our ability to travel the countryside.
You think that we got enough technology? I mean, geez, how much more production in corn are we doing, apples for apples, okay, today versus 25 years ago?
Oh, a ridiculous amount. Your trend line yield, I believe, has increased. I would have to look. I mean, I think we're up 40, 50 bushel to the acre nationally versus where we were. I mean, when I first started trading, even, you know, 13, 14 years ago, a crop above 160 was unheard of. You know, we were 145, 150. And so that's one struggle I do have with the farmer, is he is paying for the significant increase in technology that allows corn to handle heat and drought stress and still be able to produce, you know, a reasonably solid yield. He's paying for that, yet he still doesn't trust its ability to work in the heat and dry weather that we are experiencing this year. But until the combine runs, I don't know if the technology is worth it or not. But we have the seed technology. And then on the USDA side, we should have accurate technology that gives us at least somewhat of an understanding as to how we're looking from a vegetative health standpoint.
Well, I mean,
which we do. I mean, you've got Landworth and other sources that are using satellites to put together yield estimates and things of that nature.
Right. But I mean, you know, if you go back, you know, let's say even 15 years ago when you were, because you're still a baby, but
yeah,
when you started, okay, I mean, even the equipment, the tractors, the combines, everything used.
Yeah.
A lot of guys had farms, they were too big, they couldn't possibly harvest the whole damn thing anyways. You know, it was so big.
Yeah.
Now they can do them in their sleep, right? I mean, listen, with the headlights, whatever. I mean, you could, if you wanted, in theory, you could work 24 hours a day if you wanted to, okay?
Well, that's why you can throw out planning delays as the reason the market should rally anymore. I mean, unless you're absolutely solid mud for 6 weeks between April 20th and June 5th, you know what I mean? The likelihood of getting this crop in across the Corn Belt is pretty exceptional because of that technology. The same can be said for combining and things of that nature and getting the crop off at a maximum. Not to mention the agronomic details that have gone in, you know, knowing how to do variable rate feeding and variable rate fertilizer and chemical application across the acreage that you've planted. I mean, that people have taken and know the soil types and its ability to hold water and the resources in place and things like that. And they've built, basically an outline as to how you need to manage that crop to produce maximum yield potential with the weather that you're given. The only thing that the farmer has no control over anymore is how much rain he sees and what the temperatures do.
Right, but even other than the inability to get in the field, the rain, the water should be a problem in today's world because of all the technology, which goes back to your original question. Why can't we get like almost an exact account, accuracy account, instead of depending on, maybe the, maybe we didn't want to go out. Maybe it was raining. Maybe we didn't want to get our tootsies wet. I mean, what the, what's going on here?
Let's get might melt.
Right.
The reality is the USDA could give us a final yield number using crop insurance figures as of the, you know, they would have everything put together and compiled by the first part of January. They just don't. I don't know what's limiting that. But yeah, and we could take out this guesswork entirely, you know, and maybe just use trend line yields as we work our way. But that's what they'll say, is that the adjustment to trend line is why they release these updated monthly reports, blah, blah, blah. You know, the reality is we could take out, you know, a significant portion of this guesswork and really build a solid, an actual real information, you know, sort of resource. But it goes back to either people don't want to change it, they don't have the staff to do it, or there's a reason they don't want to.
Which is why I go back to my usual BS. You know, again, I hate to be like that, but I've seen enough reports between the jobs number in the equity markets and between all the other numbers, they're never accurate. And because they always go back and adjust, it's kind of stupid. It's just kind of silly, the entire way that we do things. And what's more silly is that everybody follows it like it was the gospel. And we all know that it's not the gospel. We all know that it's a flawed report, which is why when they ask me on TV, when I'm doing RFD or whatever, I go, what report? I don't care what the report says, because to me, it means nothing. We're with my friend, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. You got to check her out on Twitter. And of course, she's my agent. It was told, promised me Iowa. But also, she is the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And don't ask me why she's a vice president of a company in Michigan. She lives in Iowa. But you know what? I never ask. We're in a don't ask, don't tell environment. In the meantime, Angie's brought to you by BarkBox. And of course, for you listeners, BarkBox is offering an opportunity to receive one free extra month of BarkBox at BarkBox.com. And of course, that means every month you get delivered some toys, some treats and stuff for the pooch. You got to take care of the dogs, man. I got two of them and I take care of them real good. And of course, they get BarkBox too. And to receive one free month, go to getbarkbox.com/thebubba show. Again, that's getbarkbox.com/thebubba show to receive one extra month for free. And of course, we're going to stop by here for a break. This is Angie Setzer with Bubba, and it's the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Arts will be right back after the break.
It's about time.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess of grains, and that is Angie Setzer, who is also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie. So I bashed him, and I can't control myself. But now I want to ask you this: we saw corn, you know, obviously it was 420, right, and then down about 370 something, whatever it is. I mean, why didn't the feeder cattle go straight up? I'm confused. Their feed costs are going down. Why didn't why aren't the cattle feeders rallying? In fact, not only they're not rallying, they're falling apart. What's going on?
Yeah, you're seeing a real struggle right now in what's going on in your fat cattle, I think, and that's limiting a lot of what's happening. I mean, if you look at it, depending on which rate, you know, you plan on feeding your feeders, and when you're expecting to bring them to market as a fat. You know, right now you're exceptionally limited in your ability to make money there. So, you know, some folks will buy feeders at no cost, no thought, no care. They'll get it taken care of and maybe leg in on the one side, you know, buy the input and wait to sell, the fat later on when the market rallies. The problem is that some folks right now just think that market is somewhat limited. You know, I think, you know, we've talked about it for a while here. I think your fat cattle demand is not really going to disappear. We did get that negative story with Japan, which the reality is it's not overly negative. It's just, you know, a negative headline, you could say. So from an overall standpoint, you just didn't necessarily have that demand out there to push or enough headlines, I guess you could say, to push that feeder market higher. You know, in my opinion right now, I think we're really, you know, until we can see that fat cattle market kind of stabilize and stuff. I mean, feeders are a little bit higher today. You've got feeder cattle, you know, still trading that 142 range or so, which isn't bad, you know, versus.
Yeah, but they were 152 before the report came out.
Yeah, and they what were we in the 2013? You know, the fact is, though, with feeder cattle is that you had a significant amount of heifer retention a year ago. I think your feeder cattle crop was really solid this spring. I think we're looking at another chunk of calves to be born. You know, the drought conditions are starting to eliminate a little bit up north, which will help, you know, with pasture conditions and things like that. So, you know, from an overall standpoint, though, the problem that you have, or I have, you know, with the cattle market in general, feeders, fats, whatever it may be, is that your cash market tends to be the final say. And unfortunately, you know, your cash market may not necessarily drive your board changes as much as what it should, if that makes sense. You've got a little bit of a thinner market, you could say, on the board itself, and your local supply and demand function may be quite a bit different. But everyone has this idea that you've got an exceptional amount of feeder cattle out there and not a significant amount of fat demand, which I think is kind of false. I think your fat demand is going to remain. Your fed cattle is going to be solid. That market should find a low, support itself, and perhaps, you know, start to trade higher. But until it does, the feeders are going to have a hard time rallying back, just because, you know, like I said, you it's hard to look at your feeder cattle, look at what your fats are, you know, 6 months from now, and know that you're locking in negative margin for a lot of folks. I mean, I have feeder cattle friends right now that have empty pens, just because they're not going to, or cattle feeder friends, not feeder cattle friends, but anyway, you know, they've got empty pens because they're not going to pay, you know, $1.50 for feeders and look out to February, you know, $1.11 kind of deal. They're just, they can't, process that as a money maker. And so they're going to take some downtime and not feed. Now, of course, like you said, with your lower corn futures, why the heck aren't we feeding more? Why aren't we seeing feeders higher? But I think that relationship kind of played itself out a little bit, just in the sense that we've become so accustomed to cheap corn or cheap feed availability that it's not necessarily the driver behind how we're trading that feeder market itself.
Well, I thought fats at 112 was a good buy, but of course I guess I have to like them better at 106, and it's interesting. Well, what's really interesting is that, you know, I mean, I was bearish on fats and feeders for quite a while, and of course, mm-hmm. I picked some numbers and everybody laughed at me. You know, when I said 112, the fats were doing about 125. And now, of course, they typically go lower than you think. I didn't think they'd go this low, but I mm-hmm. think when you look at the formation has changed now, because now we are in truly a contango instead of a backwardation model, which is much better, which means that there's some bullish action behind there. But again, obviously, to get them off their ass to move, it's been very challenging. And of course, the hog market, I don't know. They don't know. They never know. They never met a down day ever. They just like to go up every day. And I really don't get that, especially because this is typically the time of year that the hogs are, you know, typically a little bit weaker, right? I mean, this is they're not going into what we'd call the strong, which is why, you know, August is went off the board at 80 something and October is 60 something. And December's in the 50s. I mean, it's still in the low 60s. But in the meantime, why are they so strong? What the hell's going on here? What makes the hog market this monster beast right now? I mean, there's no diseases out there which could account for it. No. What's making it so strong, you know?
Well, it's just it's the continued idea of significant protein demand, you know, throughout the world. That you look back and the low in place that we saw, you know, was put back the end of April. Much prior to that, I mean, going into the election last year, we were trading down quite significantly. You know, at the first part of October there, you saw 17 hogs trade down to 57. And now here we sit at 69. You know, and a lot of people will say that it's just like with the grain markets, when there's a carry in the market, you know, once the front month goes off, the second month tends to trade down to where that level went off. You know, so for 362 SEP corn, we're 376 on the D's. The reality is, if we were to go off, the low that was for the September tends to be the low target for the next month. And I think much can be the same, or what people are thinking, you know, when it comes to hogs is that we went off at 80 something on the August. The reality is we probably should see that October market continue to have a relatively strong rally. Slaughter's been good. Demand remains really solid, you know, and you can bring pigs to market. So it's one of those things where, you know, I think cattle will find support eventually. Right now, it's been a tough market to trade just because there seems to be an excessive amount of sellers and some pretty knee-jerk reactions that we've seen. But I think long-term, you see a significant remainder of demand simply because the world loves its protein sources. You know, once you taste bacon, you're not going to go back. And
give
so
them
that's
a
what we're looking at with hog.
Give them a protein shake. What the hell is going on? So, but out of all the, but in all seriousness, out of all the things to produce on a farm, okay, are not hogs the easiest thing to produce?
Pretty much. I mean, if you've got hog farmer friends, they'll tell you hogs are jerks. And there's a reason that I have a girlfriend that'll say there's nothing more satisfying than having sausage breakfast the day after loading hogs, you know, just because they are such a pain in the neck. But reality is they're somewhat low cost inputs. As long as you can keep them healthy, piglet to ready for market, it takes a short amount of time. You can have significant turnover and hogs are, they're the reason that, you know, in Iowa here, you have you can't throw a rock without hitting a hog barn. You know, we're a huge producer of pork out here. It's easy. You know, you can raise a significant amount of pigs in a small amount of space and send them to market and replace them with, you know, some feeders all over again and do it once every few months. And so, yeah, I mean, they're a heck of a lot easier to bring into the market than cattle. You know, I think it takes 6 months to finish a hog and 18 months to finish a cow.
Oh, you got 10 seconds. Where's corn and wheat going to be 3 months from now?
Yeah, I think you'll see beef corn trading between 375 and 410. I think you'll see wheat trading between 450 and $5. I think we've got upside long term. We just got to work our way through this crap that we're marching through right now.
Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator and the Goddess of Grains, thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Orts. We'll see you back tomorrow, everybody. Thank you so much. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks. We'll see you all later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.